Leave you with this one.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing. On. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to No One's Legal Radio, part of the CKUT Communist Collective's Off the Hour at 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca around the world.
Today, No One's Legal Radio is running a repeat of their feature interview with Canahus and Mayuk Manuel on Indigenous resistance to the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion, which was broadcast previously. This interview is part of No Borders Media. No Borders Media. On this show, we speak to two Indigenous warriors on the front lines of resistance to pipelines and resource extraction, Canahus Manuel and Mayuk Manuel of the Tiny House Warriors and the Shamakmak Women Warriors. They have actively resisted the Trans Mountain Pipeline Expansion Project, which would move tar sands, crude, and refined oil from Alberta to the British Columbia coast. Just millimeters from the injunction zone around the proposed pipeline expansion at Blue River, British Columbia, north of Kamloops, Canahus and Mayuk speak to No Borders Media by phone and address several topics, including an update about current opposition efforts against 518 kilometers of Trans Mountain Pipeline Corridor on Shamakmak territory, the impact of man camps used to construct the expansion, the use of wheeled tiny houses as a tactic of resistance, a recent symposium in celebration of the life and ideas of Arthur Manuel, ongoing criminalization of land defenders, the various flawed consultation processes to try to force through pipeline approval, and solidarity between Indigenous land defense struggles across Turtle Island. No Borders Media is an autonomous left-wing media network. We share and create content that supports the struggles of communities in resistance with the focus on the self-determination struggles of Indigenous peoples, migrants, refugees, and working-class people of color, all in the context of opposition to capitalism and colonialism. Some current focuses include migrant justice, resistance to borders, anti-fascism, and anarchism. We are in the early stages of our independent media project. To stay in touch, send us an email at noBordersMediaNetwork@gmail.com or look for No Borders Media on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud. We go to our feature-length interview with Shamakmak Women Warriors Canahus Manuel and Mayuk Manuel right now. I'm speaking with Canahus Manuel and Mayuk Manuel. Mayuk and Canahus are Tiny House Warriors and Shamakmak Women Warriors. They are in Blue River. They are just literally millimeters away from the injunction zone that's been set up by Trans Mountain, which is trying to build an extension to their pipeline between Northern Alberta and the British Columbia coast. We spoke with Canahus 1 year ago when the Federal Court of Appeal temporarily suspended approval for the project, but much has changed and much has happened since we spoke a year ago. Canahus and Mayuk, welcome to No Borders Media.
Hi, thanks for having us.
It's great to have you back. It's important to have you on this show, but it's also inspiring to hear about your efforts at frontline resistance against tremendous odds. And before getting into the resistance efforts you've undertaken in terms of trying to stop this pipeline from being built, maybe you can just situate our listeners in terms of where you're at today, physically speaking, but also what's up with this pipeline. When we spoke a year ago, Canahus, it was temporarily suspended, but it sort of felt like something was going to happen, and more stuff has happened in that last year. So can you talk about where you're at right now and what's happening in terms of this pipeline and the pipeline being built, just in terms of giving our listeners a general sense of what's going on, especially those people who might not know some of the details?
Well, for this past year, we've been blockading. We've been here at the site of this proposed man camp by the Trans Mountain Pipeline just recently with the approval for construction to go ahead, and they got the green light to go ahead with this construction. It shows again how the Canadian government just totally ignores that we have title, that we have rights, land rights, legitimate land rights here in Suquamish territory in so-called British Columbia, since there has never, ever been a treaty with the provincial or the federal government. No government, not the colonial Great Britain. And here we are a year later after blockading this man camp and still construction is going ahead. We knew that the federal government purchased a pipeline in order to push this construction through. And that's why we're here on the ground ensuring that this construction doesn't go through the pipes along the Yellowhead Highway all the way north to stockpiles in Edson and farther north into Edmonton, just continue to, you know, stockpile these pipes and continue to prepare to lay these pipes. We saw at Standing Rock 100 pipes per day. This geographical area that this pipeline proposes to pass, again, this pipeline is 1,142 kilometers long, and over half of this pipeline threatens to cross Suquamish territory. There's already an existing pipeline that lays there, an old 1953 pipeline. And so this expansion would twin this line and bring this to 890,000 barrels of bitumen per day. It's rough, mountainous terrain. There's a lot of river crossings and water crossings and watershed and home to so much, including home to our people and our way of life and some threatened species such as the mountain caribou and our sockeye salmon runs.
Mayuk, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, since the Trans Mountain was ordered to go back to the consultation and do another round of consultation because the first round was not sufficient enough, this was the phase three of the Indigenous consultation. So this didn't go well at all. It actually went worse than the one before. And I was arrested at the one in Kamloops at the Indigenous consultation, right in my own territory. I was arrested along with my partner, Aisha Jules, and my younger sister, Snutechko Emmanuel. We were all arrested and jailed till late into the night that night until after they were finished their consultation. And they had federal security guards and some, like a lot of different police agencies that are normally not involved and even enter into Kamloops, but they brought them in special to take down the Suquamish Women Warriors. They knew already that we were there. They targeted me thinking I was Kanahoots, and they made arrests very quickly. And they put us in handcuffs and they hauled us off to the Kamloops city cells. So that's, to us, that's a really mockery of us, of our Indigenous rights, of our Suquamish rights, when we go there to say no to a fraudulent consultation, because it was behind closed doors. They never let any of the people know. And here we're unceded territory, so we still hold collective title. And collective title means that it belongs collectively amongst the people. It's not the INAC chiefs that hold the title. That's a federal civil servant. Those are federal civil servants that work for the federal government. And that's all that composed the group that was in that consultation, was all INAC federally elected chiefs that were there that work for the federal government. And they're all pro-pipeline. So it's not only that has happened since the Federal Court of Appeal. Since then, there's several chiefs that have come forward that are planning to buy the pipeline. And we're totally against that, because they too will be guilty of violating our Indigenous rights and our inherent rights to this land and our collective title. And for us to be able to say no to projects like this that will destroy us as Suquamish people.
We're going to take some time during this interview to talk about the criminalization and the injunction and these sham consultations. We're going to talk a bit about the man camps that have been set up and why you're opposing them, the various forms of resistance, including tiny house resistance, a recent symposium. But before getting into it, I want each of you to talk about your territory, your land. What are you defending? I mean, you've talked about, just in passing just now, about this land, this pipeline passing over many lakes and rivers. But talk about this territory that you're on right now, that you've defended, the Chemehuevelk territory that your father and your grandfather and your ancestors have lived on and defended, and that you're raising your children up on. Give a sense to our listeners as best as you can and as best as we can understand as listeners who are not from there. What is this land and territory that you're defending? What does that land and territory mean to you?
Okay, it's kind of who's here. Our territory, Suquamish territory, is 180,000 square kilometers of land. This land we call Suquamish Uluh, and it refers to the land of the spilling waters, of the glaciers, of the all the water that spills from this glaciers that drops and forms all the major rivers in so-called British Columbia. And this area is a very rare inland temperate rainforest. We come from this very rare inland temperate rainforest, and we're cedar people. We're salmon people. Also, we're the protectors of the salmon spawning grounds. It's into the interior through the mountains, all the way up the Fraser, into the Thompson, into the Adams rivers, that some of the biggest sockeye salmon spawning grounds in the world are. And this is our backyard. This is where we grew up. And this Upper Adams River belt is not that far, maybe a mountain or two over from where we are right now here in Blue River. And right now we're just right in the middle of a rainforest. So it's raining right now. It's been raining for the past week. And there's a lot of snow. We spent the whole winter here blockading this man camp construction and being active, asserting our title on the land here. And there's a lot of snow, and it really gave us a real clear wake-up call to say, no, we can't allow this bitumen pipeline to come through just with the amount of snow that comes through here through these mountain passes, all the way from Edmonton, who already is extreme winter weather, all the way into our mountains. A lot of snow and a lot of water that we're talking about. And we have a language, Suquamishjin, and it's at a very rare and endangered levels right now in our nation. There's not that much fluent language speakers left in each of the Suquamish communities, and it's something that we really also put support behind, all the teachers and language speakers in our community, because that's where a lot of our stories are, a lot of our songs, a lot of our knowledge. And my grandfather would say that our language, it flows from the land, just as our culture, it flows from our land. And we've developed a really advanced way of life, and colonization during this past 150 years here in Canada has really damaged it to a state we're in right now. You know, the residential schools, the reservation system, the federal government and their racist and white supremacist laws and policies that removed us from our lands really affected us, because it's our land that we're talking about now. It's always going to come back to our land, our land base. We know we need a land base in order to survive, just basic survival, but also to have some type of economy for our people to benefit, so we can not just struggle in a 0.2% mentality. If you add up all the Indian reserves in Canada, it equals 0.2%. And so this is where we've been placed these past 150-plus years. And we have no other choice now, since just the state we're in. We're never going to grow as a nation. We're going to just continue to see the symptoms of colonization and the addictions and drugs and alcoholism and just our people leaving our communities and going into urban settings, and we're losing our nations of people. But that's another part of our work that we do in our resistance movement, in our decolonization movements, in our food sovereignty movements, and all of this is linking the connection between, you know, our land, our food, our human rights, our, you know, our birthing practices, you know, everything of who it means to be who we are as Suquamish people, to be self-determined, to our vision of what we want, our vision for our children, our vision for the future of our nations is something very healthy and powerful and strong. It's something where everybody gets fed, where everybody gets a house, where everybody gets their rights respected, where everybody can speak their language freely. And so it's not just stopping a pipeline. It's fighting for our lands, our territory, and we're so connected to it. It's such a beautiful relationship, and thank you.
Mayuk, do you want to talk a little bit about the territory and land that you're defending?
Yeah, so we're Suquamish, and we believe that our territorial authority lies within the people, most particularly the women. The matriarchs is where the title flows from our blood into our children. And so the birth work that my sister does on our land, on our territory, is very, very important and crucial. On our territory, although that we're still able to practice our way by berry picking and hunting, it's becoming more and more scarce. We see it, you know, we see it with the animals having to go more into urban settings to get their food. That's the same with us. We're being affected by the land trauma that is happening out on our territory. And this includes the transportation routes that we once flourished and benefited from, these trail routes, these trade routes, these transportation routes that we got stolen and ripped from our economy. And these are like highway, the Trans-Canada Highway number 1, the number 5, Yellowhead Highway, this pipeline corridor. These are all our economic trade routes that, like my father, Arthur Manuel, would say, us Suquamish, we come from the most fierce entrepreneurs. And I'm not afraid to say that. Yeah, I'm against this pipeline, but I believe in the true entrepreneurship of our land and how we could keep it safe and healthy for all of us. I don't believe in pipelines. I believe in balancing industry with our health as a nation. That's true economy. That's how we're going to be wealthy far, far, far into the future, is looking and seeing our economy in a way where we balance industry and health. With these transportation routes, Yes, we do travel them because, like I said, they're our routes. What I learned about our trade routes and our trails was that we followed and we copied these animals, and the best traveler of the land is the coyote, Siklep, Sinhochloch, the best traveler of the land. And we all know that that's our teacher. And these trade routes, they were enshrined in our DNA. This is where our missing and murdered women, this is where our own sisters are going missing right now. So it's taking something that's really entrenched in the way we see our land rights and title, the women, and how our title runs and through the blood of the women into her children. And now these same transportation routes are being used to rip the women from our nations and from our economy. And this is really devastating to our people. It's very traumatic. I don't know if we're ever going to come back from what is happening to the women, that our women are being taken, they're being stolen, they're being murdered. I don't know if our nations as Indigenous will ever come back from this. But me and my sister are here. We're saying no to man camps. We're saying no to the violence on our land and these transportation routes. And soon you'll see us targeting these transportation routes. And it's going to cause a lot of disturbance, even 1 hour, even 2 hours. And the more and more we encourage other people to do it, we're going to disrupt a lot of the economy here in the world. By disrupting it here on these highways, our transportation routes, we disrupt the world's economy. We're learning more and more about that from the experts that we brought together for this symposium. And kind of who could talk more about that, but that's it's really important to learn from the economists from Canada how we could take down Canada as well.
We're speaking with Kanellis Manuel and Malik Manuel. They are just millimeters away from an injunction zone set up by Trans Mountain Pipeline. They are tiny house warriors, Shamakmok women warriors. Kanellis and Malik, you've both spoken about the man camps that you're opposing. This is one manifestation of the pipeline project. In order for it to be built, these man camps are set up. So can you tell our listeners, what are these man camps? Why are you opposing them? What are the negative effects of these man camps? And why has this become one of your focuses for opposition to the pipeline on your territory?
Kanellis here. These man camps, in particular, this man camp here in Blue River that Trans Mountain has set for 1,000 men, construction workers that would come in to lay the pipe, that would be the construction workers all along this pipeline corridor. They have different sites plotted for man camps. One here in Blue River, there's a Belmont site, there's the Clearwater site, and Kamloops, which would be just within the city of Kamloops into the hotels and other housing. There'd also be man camp sites in Merritt and Hope, which are outside of the Suquamish territory, but also just as vulnerable to Indigenous women and girls. These man camps, the majority are transient men, workers that come to these sites. The man camps that have been plaguing the areas of North Dakota, you know, the back end, northern Alberta and Fort McMurray, Edmonton area, have shown to increase violence against Indigenous women. We're talking about sexual attacks and rapes. We're talking even about domestic violence increase in the homes. A lot of times these men, mainly men, will leave their wives and their communities and come to these isolated communities and have no accountability. They don't know anybody in these communities, and they leave their wives at home. And so the human trafficking, you know, becomes very prevalent, and it's our Indigenous girls and women that are the most vulnerable in the human trafficking. And so, again, we talk about the murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls because it's something that every single Indigenous community across the country, every single family within Indigenous country and Indian country has felt the wrath of one of their loved ones, their women and girls in their family, either being murdered or missing. And that's not an exaggeration. I myself and my family, my sister, have lost our grandmother to murder. And so nobody is excused from this in Indian country. And by having man camps come into these communities where Indigenous girls are the most vulnerable, we'll see the amounts increase. And it's too much to risk. It's just way too much to risk because we hear the stories. We hear of the stories of our girls from our communities going into these camps to work as janitors and custodians only to leave just damaged by rape. This is a real life story of our girls in our communities.
And Malik, do you want to add anything about the man camps and your opposition to it?
A lot of people who haven't been around a large group of men, like in the 100 or 200, 300, 400, 500. But like my partner, he was in the U.S. Army, Aisha Jules. He's just a Suquamish veteran. And he reminds people at the front gate. He reminds men who are saying these are good jobs, these are good camps. He lets them know, no, I was actually a part of a big, huge man camp called the U.S. Army. And no, when you put men together, that much men together, no, you don't want to send women around them. You know, this is people who think that they have integrity. They're going to go get a job. They're going to get work. No, no. The social cost of having just only men or majority men in these camps is not healthy. It's not healthy for your mind, heart, body, and spirit, and just being holistic. It's just, it's not safe. It's not safe to even put them. I don't believe in having man camps anywhere within Tikamakuluk or anywhere in Canada, for that matter. I don't believe in it. And when I started doing the research about these man camps, I realized that they set up Canada with man camps. These men have been raping women. I start looking at even Geronimo reading what God him started. He got started because those man camps were raping Indigenous women and his own family members. That's what caused the big why he rose up into action. So enough of women are getting murdered, or we just recently, it's a lot. It's genocide. And just recently, there's a court case going on right now in Salmonarm, is it, or in the in the Okanagan, but it was just 45 minutes from where me and Canada grew up, that they found a dead body right beside this man's trailer his parents owned this property. He was living on a trailer, and they found a dead body right there buried in the ground. This man, they say, they have no evidence to prove that he's guilty. He's going to court, but it looks like he's going to get off. And this reminds me of Gerald Stanley. This reminds me he already hit women in the heads with hammers. I don't know all the details. I just know that this guy's guilty. And this is the vulnerability that we face as Indigenous women, that even if we do press charges, there's no one going to have to pay the cost. No one's going to go to jail for any of the rapes. We see this time and time again. Why would we know that our women are going to be at risk and the police are going to do nothing about it? The social services will be overwhelmed and have no way to help them. Why would we include that in our economy? We have the choice. We have the choice to govern ourselves and say what economy is good for us and what economy is bad for us. And we say that pipeline and the pipeline industry is bad. It's only going to do more damage and more trauma to our people. And we say no. And we're just going to keep on saying no. I have two sons. I do worry for their economics. But to me, I believe that asserting our title and rights, we get more from our economics because we're actually fighting for our Sihuam economics. And that's going to sustain us far into the generations. Whereas this pipeline, and we see this at Mount Polly when the tailings dam got breached and all that toxic material all went right into the Quesnel Lake, we see that they had no way of cleaning that up. That's the same with the impacts of rape and murder in our community from these man camps. They have no way of fixing it. There's no remedy for it. And that's why we have to say no and reject them completely altogether out of our territory.
For our listeners, the reference just now to Gerald Stanley is the Saskatchewan man who shot and killed Colton Bushy in the summer of 2016, and who was later acquitted by an all-white jury by an all-non-Native jury of second-degree murder. Mayuk and Kanahus, and Mayuk, maybe you could start the answer to this question. One form of resistance that you and others on the territory have undertaken is what's called being tiny house warriors. Mayuk, you recently posted about 5 tiny houses that are ready and have been deployed or are going to be deployed on Chinook territories, the Salmon House, the Black House, the Elk House, the Blue House, and the Green House. You have a 6th one, a warrior house, on its way. You're preparing 10 in total. But please, Maya, tell our listeners about this really creative, inspiring form of resistance and why you're undertaking this form of resistance, why you're deploying tiny houses on the path of the pipeline, but more importantly, on your territory as Shamokwelk?
Well, we have 5 tiny houses here right on the front line, right stopping this man camp construction from happening. So there's 5 of them. 2 of them are solarized. We also got the work from Melina from
Sacred Earth.
Sacred Earth Solar. She came in, she donated a whole solar trailer. So the ones that aren't solarized, we run an extension cord and we run power, like our lights and
devices and stuff into the houses, the ones that do not have the solar panels on them. And but we have since got the offer that Melina does want to help us solarize all of the 10 tiny houses. So we're really excited about that. But five of them are here on the front line, and the sixth one, we are going to be traveling up and down the pipeline corridor with a radio station. So it'll be a low-frequency radio station. It'll go about 25-mile radius around, and we're going to be just giving the information to people, travelers along this Yellowhead Highway, the damages that Kinder Morgan has already done here and the Trans Mountain has already done here with all the spills that have occurred over these 50-some years of their existence here. I think it might even be 60 years, I don't know, 50-something years since their existence, and about the risks that the Trans Mountain Pipeline will have on this beautiful landscape here in Sihuamukuluk. And so that Warrior House is dedicated to that radio station. But we also see the need for young artists, a lot of young hip-hop artists that need a space to record. So we're also opening it up to the youth, Indigenous youth that need a space and the technology to record their own music. And we're hoping that they'll put a lot of information out there about a bitumen pipeline, about the effects of our title and rights from this pipeline, and just get the information out using this radio station and using the music to educate the people, because the majority of our Indigenous populations are very young. So you take the majority of the rest of the Canada, they say they're baby boomers, right? But in ours, the majority is probably under the age of 15, the majority of our population. So we do need to support them, and we do want them to learn how to speak up for themselves, to have a voice, and to be able to be creative about it. And so that's what that Warrior Tiny House will be dedicated to. We're really excited, and it's an honor of our brother Neskis, who's passed on now. And the reason why all these tiny houses are on wheels is to avoid injunction and avoid ending up in lengthy injunction battles in the civil Canadian court, where we have no arena in that court system, the civil injunction or the civil court, to address any of our land claims issues. So you get pulled and dragged into this court. It could take years. It's arrest. It's jail time. And we didn't want to have that. And plus, we have 518 kilometers of pipeline corridor to defend against this pipeline. So that's why each of the tiny houses are on wheels. We are just recently, it's running until the 20th, right? The Tiny House Warrior Auction for Action. And that's the way that we've been raising money for Tiny House Warriors, along with our GoFundMe page. But the Tiny House Warriors Auction for Action allows artists to contribute their own art for us to make fundraising money for the front line. And so we're really grateful for all the talented artists that are donating so beautiful jewelry, artwork, prints, clothing. That's what made it possible for us to buy two hauling trucks that haul these tiny houses. So we have five on the front line. But we are expanding, and we're moving to a different village too. So we're going to have two places, and we're also going to be stopping some of the construction that's been going right now with another location. So you'll see three or four in the next little while, us moving them around and stopping and interfering or delaying the construction. Whatever we could do to affect the investors, affect the money flowing through this, we're gonna affect it. We're going to stop it and fuck it up.
Kanahos and Mayuk, I want to get into the criminalization of resistance. We've seen this already. Different civil injunctions have been used to arrest people. There are people who've done jail time for their resistance on Burnaby Mountain, which is towards the end of where this pipeline is supposed to be built. A lot of those jail sentences have been happening in the past few weeks. You yourselves have been subject to criminalization. You're just millimeters away, as you put it, from this injunction zone. And if you just step a couple of millimeters one way, you can be subject to arrest. And you've already been subject to arrest and criminalization. So talk about that aspect of things, because it's pretty clear from this interview and previous interviews that you both, along with other members of your community and other people who are acting as accomplices and allies in this struggle, you want to stop this pipeline. And in order to do so, that might mean pretty intense criminalization, if not worse. So talk about how you're confronting criminalization and the criminalization that's already happened.
Well, the government, this is kind of who's here. The government of Canada will continue to use whatever means necessary on their part in order to push projects like these pipelines through. The Canadian government has admitted on public radio and news that they would bring the military in to push this pipeline through. And we know that we're always going to be, you know, facing off with Canada. Canada's the second largest country of the world. We're fighting pipeline that the Canadian government now owns. You know, they own the military. They can fund this pipeline. As someone in the symposium said, they're writing blank checks for this construction to go through. We've been faced with criminalization, not just from injunctions, and what the charge that is a breach of obstruction. It's actually an obstruction charge that they charge you with. And we've been charged with trespassing. We've been charged with mischief, and they like to charge us with mischief a lot. They charge us with vandalism. They'll charge us with blocking a highway. They've charged us with intimidation by blocking a highway. So much different charges they have charged us with. Fighting for our land. This is not just the Trans Mountain pipeline, but fighting for our land.
Continuing my interview with Canajos Manuel and Mayuk Manuel, they are in Blue River, just across from an injunction zone imposed through the courts on the demand of Trans Mountain, which is trying to expand the pipeline from northern Alberta to the BC coast, a pipeline that will allow for almost 900,000 barrels of bitumen from the tar sands area. Canajos and Mayuk, we've just talked a bit about criminalization. Maybe, Mayuk, if you want to add anything to Canajos' answer about how people are being criminalized and the possibilities of more criminalization as the resistance to this pipeline steps up in the coming weeks and months.
Yes, one of the things that my father talked about when he said that when you stand up for your land, you end up with handcuffs, face down with handcuffs on. And that's what's becoming the norm here in Canada, is that Native Indigenous title holders are standing up in defense of our homeland, which is our right, an inherent right of ours to defend our land. And we are taken away in handcuffs and jailed. And we see that more and more all across as people are standing in defense of our self-determination and our right to defend our land and say no to projects that will destroy us. You see that we're jailed, we're taken away, we're put into this criminal justice system. And when we're there, there's no avenue when we're in there to address the outstanding land claims issue or anything to do with land for that matter. We get criminalized, therefore the only thing that we're sent in court to defend is actually criminal charges. So if we do bring up anything saying, well, it is our land, we have every right to defend it, they won't listen to those arguments in a criminal system that wants to just criminalize us. They'll look, if it's a mischief charge, they'll see if we're guilty of mischief. If it's an assault charge, they'll see if we're guilty of assault. But and nowhere in the court proceedings will they ever listen to or address our outstanding land issue, and that we have every right to have our own governing system. And when we say it's our land, we say it's our law. So we it's actually a big violation to be pulling us into Canadian criminal system when we're actually self-determined Tsleil-Waututh Nation, and we have our own laws, and one of our laws is to defend and protect our land.
For our listeners who are wondering, the dog in the background is named Chacha, which means little sister, and I've been noticing that Chacha seems to be barking more and more whenever you guys are talking about being arrested or criminalization. I don't know if that, well, that has anything to do with it, yeah. But I'm not there.
We actually have, like, where the man camp location is, they want to put the man camp location, is actually a huge wild blueberry ground for our people. And that's where the bears go. So that's one of the reasons we have the dog here, because it keeps the bear out of our kitchen. And last year, the bear got into our kitchen. So this year, we have there's a lot of bears. There's a lot of black bears, grizzly bears. We're in bear country here. And we're actually in their berry picking ground. So we pick a little, but most of the time, we just left a lot of the berries for the bears. And they ate all of it. It's all gone.
So, Kanahus and Maya, just a couple of more questions, just maybe two or three. One is about the context of your struggle within broader struggles on Turtle Island, but particularly on the part of Turtle Island that's known as the Canadian state or Canada. In Kanazatage, people have spoken out more recently. We've covered it on No Borders Media about land theft and have given an ultimatum to Justin Trudeau. Last December and January, but part of a longer-term struggle, there was the Gitomin camp and in Stoughton camp opposing pipelines as well. There's lesser-known struggles like the Sudakult camp in north of Vancouver, which has prevented development. So can you talk about solidarity between struggles? To what extent are you paying attention to those other struggles? To what extent is that being coordinated? Talk about the land defense and warrior struggles across Turtle Island, but particularly in Canada, to oppose not just pipelines, but unfair or unjust natural resource development and extraction industries all across Canada.
Yes, this is Kanahus. We're paying very close attention to all of the Indigenous resistance that's happening all across this continent. We're very impacted and connected that way, that anything they do to our brothers in the south or to the east, they do to us here, and vice versa. How the Canadian state reacts to us here is how they're going to react elsewhere. So it's really important for us to stay very connected amongst our Indigenous resistance movement and really keep tabs on the way that the federal government is responding to Indigenous resistance and the surveillance that takes place. I myself just got back from a trip to Chicago to do some alliance building with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. of the Black Panther Party Cubs. And upon my arrival back to the Tiny House Warrior Village here in Blue River, we had a visit by the RCMP that came to... unwanted visit by the RCMP that came to, blurt out questions saying, what did you do? How was your trip in Chicago? Are you ready for winter? And we never engaged with the RCMP when they come here to our camp. We refuse to engage or acknowledge them being low-level civil servants on behalf of the government. We don't engage with them, but they'll still continue to do things like this. They'll follow us. They'll stop our people coming to and from the camp. And we just see time and time again the type of harassment that we face by the RCMP. We know how they're being targeted. We're all being targeted every time we stand up. But the more we help raise the awareness of these movements within our platforms, it helps to keep our people safe. One of the things we're doing is really working on documenting the international human rights violations that are happening at the hands of the Canadian state. So we can start to document, okay, they've came 200 days out of the past year type of data that we're going to be able to expose at the international level, how the Canadian government uses the RCMP, how the Canadian state uses other civil servants to crush our movements, to continue to steal land, to push us back to the Indian Reserve, whatever it takes. But as Indigenous resistance movements, we stand in solidarity with all of them. We need to have that pact. They come in on us here. We got to shut them down over there.
Mayak, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think a lot about, because I do use my dad's book as reference, even though I have all of those discussions in my mind and my heart. I still look at his books and I read chapters of it or parts of it when I actually just want to feel my dad close to me. And those books are Unsettling Canada and Reconciliation Manifesto by Arthur Emanuel. And one of the chapters in one of his books is called White Supremacy, The Law of the Land. And that's what I feel like when we're talking about, yeah, the policing and the criminalization, but it's also all those laws, all of what gives the police the authority to come after us when we come out onto their land and who's giving the orders. And it's all to do with the laws and the politics behind Canada. It's very white supremacist, and that's what's kept us oppressed. That's what's dispossessed us from our land. And that's what's creating this continued oppression upon our people is this white supremacy. And it's just entrenched in the laws of Canada. It's entrenched in the land. Land laws and all of this with the permitting, we have no say, or even if we say no, it just gets pushed ahead. All of these are all domestic, and like my dad talked about it, and he didn't want to fight domestically within Canada, meaning like at the AFN level or butting heads with Justin Trudeau or anything like that, because like I said, the whole law, all the laws are all white supremacy laws. And we're never going to win within their system. We're never going to win within their courts. That's what the Wolverine said. That's what my dad said. And that's why they always push to get outside of this country to deal with the outstanding land question. And this is where it's proven that if you get a third party country or a third party adjudication to look at the laws, they'll see quite clearly that Canada is not following their laws. So they say rule of law, and it's all about rule of law, and they come in and arrest us and take us out. Actually, that is not the rule of law. The rule of law is that we have title to the land. We have title, inherent title, that's running through our veins right now. Canada has the jurisdiction to look after their citizens of Canada. We're not trying to kick the people of Canada out. We're not trying to stop Canada from looking after its own citizens. But there has to be a real distribution of wealth and power that has to change in Canada, because 0.02% is not going to save us from where we're at in this genocidal practice of Canada. We'll just continue under this 0.02% land base. We have to get out from there. There has to be a distribution, a more equal distribution amongst the wealth, so we get our fair share of the wealth. And I'm not talking about industry like pipelines. I'm talking about clean land, sustainable economy, our own energy policies that will take us into the future, our land policies, our own food policies that will take us into the future and look after our people, because we're poor. A lot of people's only choice is to either kill their own selves through suicide, which I call genocide, or starve, or just keep on struggling through the trauma of like not having an economy. Like, that's very traumatic. That's why we're here. It's not just to do our berry picking and root digging, although that's very important. We're talking about being able to sustain our own nation, the 10,000 Tsleil-Waututh, to solve our own problems and look after our own people. This 518-kilometer pipeline will not do that, will not help our people. That's why we say no, it's not going to help. And in order for us not to be criminalized, we have to get outside of Canada. We have to get outside of Canada and address our issues elsewhere. Because as long as we're here in Canada, we're going to continue to get criminalized again and again and again. That's why it's important, the work that Kennahoos does, my brother Skahish, with the Indigenous Network on Economies and Trade, and the economic work they're doing internationally. That is what's going to save us as a nation.
Kennahoos and Mayuk, throughout this interview, you've spoken about really the diversity of ways in which resistance takes place, from you know, being present physically on the front line, through occupations, blockades, through the tiny house tactic, through talking about other forms of economies, through mobilizing allies worldwide and within the country, through fighting in the courts, through popular education, just putting out audio and video about the struggle. You've talked about basically a diversity of ways in which resistance takes place. But one way that resistance takes place that both of you have never been shy about conveying and practicing is the more messier forms, that is direct action and civil disobedience, the kind of tactics and strategies that a lot of people stay away from. So I'm wondering if you can address that once again, especially in light of the fact that a lot of ENGOs are involved in anti-pipeline resistance, that being opposed to pipelines has become more of a mainstream thing in society, but not everybody's comfortable with the tactics and strategies that frontline people have to use to actually stop those pipelines. So talk about the kinds of tactics that get used that are often dismissed as too radical or counterproductive.
Hi, this is Kanahus. Yeah, I always find criticism in movements that want to water everything down. And in this day and age, in this age of urgency, that we really need to, you know, hype the action up. We really need to take more direct action in the face and confront industry, confront government, confront all levels of government, confront them to the people, to the face. When you pull the strings and you find who's at the very end, go to their house, confront them. Don't be scared. Your voice is necessary for us to survive. And some of these bigger global climate change movements that are happening right now are amazing, but we have to have the radicals, the anarchists, the ones that are not scared to make the moves that are necessary. We need to create the risk and uncertainty of capitalism, the risk and uncertainty of destructive companies like Trans Mountain, Imperial Metals, you know, all these gold companies, Gold Corp, you know, that are going around the world. Like, we need to face off with them and shake them up where their money is at and where they feel the safest. They're affecting our homes and they're destroying our homes. Well, let's go to their homes and see how they like it. And we can't be scared. And one of the things that Wolverine said to me time and time again, don't have any fear. They stood their ground at Gustafson Lake, so we wouldn't have to do that fight like that. Don't be fearful. We are going in. And we are protected in this battle, too, because that's another thing our elders have taught us, to always have our protection before our action. But action comes in many forms, and sometimes it comes from young people healing. So once they're healing, they're on that healing path and they have a voice again, then they could stand up. So, you know, action comes in many, many forms, and to guide and support all the front line, all the young people that are starting to get their voice in poetry and in the arts, support them all, because our arts is so closely linked to resistance and decolonization.
Mayek, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I just think that because we're Indigenous, we gain our fighting spirit from the stories, the war stories of the past. Like, right now, just even in here, we have kids homeschooling, so we're listening to the Crazy Horse audiobook, and we're listening to all of the warfare tactics and the bravery and the courage and how that supports our nation is to have young men, young women courageous, and how they talk about raising their newborn daughters to raise warriors. So it's thought of generational. So when my father had us, he knew we were going to be warriors. He knew we were going to be little fighters. And he would even have chuckles when we'd get sent home for being cheeky, or get sent home with a note for being cheeky, standing up to these white teachers trying to be racist to us and put us down. We'd stand up for ourselves. And he'd chuckle about it, and he'd ask us, how did you learn to be so cheeky? And we said, from you, Dad. We learned it from you the best. So he was cheeky. He knew how to stand up for himself. He taught his daughters how to stand up for ourselves. And
And we're teaching our kids how to stand up and speak and have a voice and stand up for themselves. And other parents all over, they have to stand up. Don't let your children see you cower down. Anytime there's an opportunity to stand up, you stand up. Don't let yourself get bullied. You stand up and you fight back.
Canojos and Mayuk, I wanted to ask one last question, and that's around the climate crisis and the fact that there's been a huge focus worldwide on climate change, on mobilizing around it. There's going to be, we're speaking today on September 15th, there's going to be the global climate strike happening on both September 20th and September 27th. Thousands, hundreds of thousands mobilizing all around the world, people engaging in direct action as part of things like Extinction Rebellion. Capitalist parts of society who've rebranded themselves as green or caring about climate change. It's just a lot of focus on that. And that focus has happened within the last decade or so while you guys have been engaging the front lines. I'm just wondering, how do you engage the movement around climate change? To what extent do you have a critique of it? To what extent are you part of it? Give our listeners a sense of how folks, indigenous folks on the front lines of resisting pipelines, which means resisting climate change, take in this incredible worldwide movement around the climate crisis.
Kanahus here. Indigenous peoples are at the front line of climate change. We are the most impacted. We feel the actual attacks right now. We feel it by our food harvesting practices. We feel it by our waters rising in the north. We feel it by, you know, our salmon going deep, deep into our rivers so we can't even fish them with our dip nets anymore. We're feeling them in so many different ways. And, you know, that's why we say there's such a big urgency, because it's actually affecting our dinner table. It's actually taking food out of our children's mouths. There's so much fisher families in our nation right now that has gotten zero salmon this year. Ones that are used to putting hundreds of salmon away for a year don't have any for the winter. This is what climate change means to Indigenous people. And, you know, the only way that we're going to make any changes is if we actually make changes in our households. My family left the Indian Reserve, packed up, and moved out of the only home on the little Indian Reserve, the 0.2%, to move out onto a pipeline corridor to block it with our bodies. That's the type of dedication and commitment that we have and that the people of the world need to have right now. This is not just about an airy fairy march, climate change, climate youth student strike, walkout. No. You either check out of this world and die, or you fight back. And that's where we're at right now.
This has been an interview with Canojos Manuel and Mayuk Manuel. In case people didn't catch on, they are sisters. They are on the front lines of the struggle against the Trans Mountain Pipeline and defending the sovereignty of the Tsleil-Waututh people, along with many other people. We were speaking to them in the Blue River, literally, as they put it, within millimeters of the injunction zone, where if they cross, they can be subject to arrest. Canojos and Mayuk, thank you again for speaking with us on No Borders Media.
Thank you,
Jaggy. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Wake up, wake up.
Listening to a No Borders Media feature interview with Tsleil-Waututh women warriors Canojos Manuel and Mayuk Manuel about ongoing Indigenous resistance to the Trans Mountain Pipeline. They spoke to us from the front lines just outside the injunction zone at Blue River, British Columbia. Listeners are encouraged to consult the show notes for links to online fundraisers in support of the efforts of Canojos and Mayuk. If you didn't know, Canojos and Mayuk are twin sisters. After our formal interview, they wanted to share this call out about the expansion or twinning of the Trans Mountain Pipeline.
Twins against the twinning of the Trans Mountain Pipeline.
No Borders Media is an autonomous left-wing media network. We share and create content that supports the struggles of communities in resistance with a focus on the self-determination struggles of Indigenous peoples, migrants, refugees, and working class people of color, all in the context context of opposition to capitalism and colonialism. Some current focuses include migrant justice, resistance to borders, anti-fascism, and anarchism. We are in the early stages of our independent media project. To stay in touch, send us an email at NoBordersMediaNetwork@gmail.com or look for No Borders Media on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud. We end the show with the Wake Up Song by George Manuel Jr., recorded live in April 2015 on Chinookmiut territory.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, October 7th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests, Claudia Shantak, Diversity Commissioner at the 10th Annual Phenomena Festival.
Being in like a space together and sharing art and emotion and feelings. So we're really excited to be together because we know everyone went through stuff for the past year and a half. And now it's time to take back like the place and the stage, but also the Myland.
Lee Ann Taylor on performing on the phone in a one-on-one play.
And I have to admit that even though I really don't know who the audience members are that I've shared this experience with, I feel so connected to each and every one of them when I hang up.
And director Stephen Greenwood brings a fantasy world to life.
Oh, I'm so excited to be back in a theater and doing a live theater show and just